And welcome to Schools in Focus, an 1105 media podcast. I'm your host, Matt Jones, senior editor of Spaces for Learning and Campus Security and Life Safety. We got a great episode for you today with guest Sue Ann Hyland. Currently, she's the National Education Strategist for School Specialty, but previously, she served as an educator for more than 25 years as a school and district administrator, a curriculum director, a teacher, and everything in between. She's here to talk about how dynamic learning environments can help keep students active and engaged. We'll talk about the 6 instructional elements that support dynamic learning, the positive and negative impacts of the pandemic, the increased reliance of both students and teachers on the digital landscape, and the general impact of learning environments on a student's educational journey. Today's episode is brought to you by School Specialty. Hi, and welcome to Schools in Focus. I'm your host, Matt Jones, and I'm here today with Sue Ann Hyland, PhD, who's the National Education Strategist for School Specialty. Sue Ann, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having us.
First off, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Absolutely. I have over 25 years experience in both teaching and administration in school districts, and have done lots and lots of consulting over the last 10 or 15 years in improvement. If you kind of look at what specialty areas people have, mine is really in turnaround. That's kind of where my passion and my focus has been over the last 20 years. I love to go in and help districts really improve what their situation is, increase not only their test scores, but just their environment and, for both for teachers and students.
Yeah. And it must be interesting getting both sides of the coin, having spent kind of time in the trenches as like a teacher, to be able to move over and do consulting. It seems like you have a little bit more experience on both sides.
Oh, it's so much fun. It's so nice to be able, when you're consulting, to walk into a building and have the empathy and the understanding of the classroom and also the administration, because being teachers these days and being administrators these days is not an easy job. I've always felt like being a principal was the best job in the world until I came here. Now I am loving what I am able to do with schools and districts and with our company here at School Specialty.
Good. Do you mind if I ask what grade levels you taught?
Oh my goodness. I have been everything from preschool. I worked in preschools when I was going to college, and I've gone all the way through the grades and taught even at the college level.
Oh, wow. So yeah. So just kind of across the board all the way.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So let's go ahead and jump in. Our focus today is creating more dynamic learning environments, and the keyword there is dynamic. So let's go ahead and focus on that first. It seems like the dynamic environments of 2 years ago, and let alone something like 5 years ago, have changed dramatically since then. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's been interesting, especially with the onset of COVID, to watch our resilient teachers and administrators jump in and try and do anything and everything they could to create that dynamic learning environment in the toughest of situations.
How would a dynamic environment from, let's say, 5 years ago look different than one from 2 years ago?
Well, 5 years ago and beyond, we really were looking at how to engage students. That really hasn't changed. The main situation has been just the influx of the online environment versus the physical environment. Now, when we're coming back and we're faced with all of the regulations as far as, spacing and masking and shields, things like that, that's really put pressure on us to think about engagement a little differently. How can we keep kids excited about learning? How can we keep kids interested in content when they may not have access to everything online? So now, moving back into that environment, it's forcing us to think about things a little differently, like I said. And now we get a chance to really say, okay, what were we doing 5 years ago that worked? What were we doing 5 years ago that we wanted to improve? What impact has COVID had on us? And now, looking forward, you know, one day we're going to be out of masks. We're going to, fingers crossed, right?
That exactly. Yeah.
We're going to, we're not going to have to space kids out at 3 and 6 feet. So it really has challenged us to take a look and say, okay, now what can we do going forward that maybe engages kids in a new and exciting way? If you look at just what does dynamic learning mean, it really means getting learning change to fit the needs of kids, active. We're making, helping kids to make progress at their own pace, to be engaged with the content, to be engaged with other students. Now we get a chance to even look deeper into the impact of social emotional learning. How can we take our lessons from being isolated, from being online, and put those back into classrooms in a positive way? I love the focus of social emotional impact. I love being able to take that same concept and say, okay, how do we also engage our teachers differently and give them the tools that they need to be able to impact students?
Remote learning over the last year and a half has obviously been a really big adjustment for everybody, students, teachers, faculty, administration. Not all of the effects have been bad. There have been some positive effects and negative effects. So just so we can end on a positive note, let's start with the cons. What are some of the negative effects of remote learning on trying to set up a dynamic learning environment?
Well, not having the kids all in the same space. Teachers love being able to look at faces and gain that nonverbal cue to be able to say, either I'm struggling and I need help, or celebrate when they've done something well. So that's the number one thing. Our teachers are caregivers by nature. I always tell people teaching is really not just a job. When anybody asks me what I do for a living, I always tell them I'm an educator. And the reason that I say that is because, again, teaching is not just a job. It is who we are as people. If you ask most teachers, they'll tell you, it is who I am to the heart of my being, you know? So not being able to give those hugs, not give those high fives and those smiles is really tough on a teacher. We also know that we have kids who struggle in their learning. They need extra support. They need that little one-on-one assistance that's in the moment. And we also really know that we've got a lot of kids who don't have access to food. They don't have access to, you know, really good nutritional services that we have in our schools. They don't really have, you know, the library of books at home. So those teachers really want to be able to go and help those kids. You know, I tell the story of my own daughter. So I have three kids, and my youngest is a high schooler. She learned in so many neat new ways, but yet she really missed those social connections that she got as a high schooler. It was her freshman year last year. So not being able to go and see other people and learn how to navigate life in that way has been, you know, that's been tough. We've got kiddos who want to come to school every day and get that support and that encouragement. However, like you said, there have been some really neat positives that have come out of this. One of the really great positive things is it really did push us to explore new methods on instruction. It's really pushed us into being able to utilize tools that we can have students give us assignments online instead of just doing paper pencil. It's encouraged our students and teachers to explore resources that are online. How can we use some of those intervention programs and track student progress that way? You know, here at School Specialty, we've got some intervention materials that are online based, and you can track a student's progress. You can take a look at, you know, where they're struggling, where they're doing well. That's kind of been a fun positive. I think the other positive thing is a lot of our kids really became really autonomous and started to own their learning. That's exciting. I've heard stories about kids who learned in the backyard, who sat with their computer under a tree, who sat, you know, laid on the couch, laid on their bed, on the floor, sat at the kitchen table, you know, and they're really, they took hold of where do I learn best? That is super exciting. I even heard a story about a high schooler who decided that, you know what, it might actually be kind of fun to listen to a teacher, you know, teach the lesson sitting in the hot tub. What a fun and crazy way to learn, right? But that's what that student needed at the time. How exciting.
Yeah, I think I can relate to that for sure. We've been working from home also, and there's definitely something about bringing your laptop out on like the back porch.
Absolutely.
And being able to like sit, recline, get like a cup of coffee, and just get like some fresh air and a change of scene.
Absolutely. And I think it's really gotten teachers to say, wow, you know, do I really need to have students sitting in a straight row or in a desk all the time? You know, we've had many conversations with teachers over the last year on, remember, it was hard for you to sit in one spot for 7 hours and teach. So how can we change that? And, you know, even right now, teachers are embracing, even though it's hard, it is probably the toughest time I've ever seen in schools, but they're really embracing that idea of what are some other things I can do? You know, we taught I was working with a second year teacher, and she was walking into this third year and she was scared. She was really, really nervous about going back. How do I meet the needs of these kids without being able to hug them? How do I meet the needs of these kids with sitting them, you know, 3 feet apart? So we brainstormed some really creative ways to be flexible, to give kids that ability to still communicate, but yet have some fun with it at a distance. So she and I came up with some ideas, like a little thing I like to call airmail, where she had little whiteboards and kids were working with partners clear across the room, and they got a chance to hold up a little whiteboard and give answers to other students across the room and ask questions of one another. What a fun, creative way to get kids collaborating without having to get them up and moving around and, you know, in each other's space. I can say that, you know, another really great positive that we've seen come out of COVID is the influx of funding. It's super exciting to see that our government has really stepped in to say, we're going to support you and give all of this really great money and say, okay, now schools, what can we do with that? We can support students through some additional social emotional programs, through environments that support dynamic learning. And, you know, dynamic learning is not a tangible thing that I can put my finger on. So if you were to ask me how to create a dynamic learning environment in my school, what I would tell you is I don't want to prescribe something to you. I want to stand side by side, consult, and really talk you through what we call our 6 instructional and design elements. These 6 elements really are going to help create a framework for you that will allow your environments to support the teaching and learning that you want in your building. So, for example, our 6 elements are choice, comfort, versatility, connection, stimulation, and technology. So if you kind of pick those apart, and what does that look like? What does that mean for a dynamic environment? Choice, well, that's a fun one. Kids getting choice on what kind of seat they sit on. Is it a regular chair? Is it a wobble stool? Is it a standing desk? Is it a soft seating corner in the back of the room? Is it, like we talked about earlier, laying on the floor? Those kinds of things really are going to give students that ownership of how they learn, not just what they learn. Comfort, well, that's an obvious one. We want them to be comfortable. As you said, sitting at home, boy, we know what it means to maybe not have the right equipment at home to be able to do our work effectively, right? So we want to be able to give kids that comfort. If it's on a regular chair, some students do learn best that way. if it's in a beanbag chair or in a stool, on a stool that rocks, that's really, again, something that we want to encourage. I'm not going to come in and tell you, you have to have 4 wobble stools and 2 standing desks. If that doesn't meet the needs of your environment, that doesn't make any sense. Then, of course, this third one really, really touches on what one thing that we learned really hard in this whole COVID environment, versatility. We really want to be able to help you design an environment that's dynamic enough that you can move and use that furniture in a different way. You may have kids in straight rows for some particular activity. You may want to do like a Socratic seminar and put kids in a large circle. You might want to have small groups. Even the act of pulling kids back to do some small group instruction for them. We want things to be able to be very, very movable and flexible in that environment. Then, of course, stimulation. We want to have, you know, we want to help you create an environment. You know, if you're looking around and I see things that are all one bland color, I walk out into the hallway or into the cafeteria and I go, oh, wow, that's kind of boring, right? You know, it's not something that invites me in to work in a small group out in a hallway, to go and collaborate with someone on a project. Even that cafeteria and media center space, those are changing. Those are getting to be spaces where kids can sit and have a conversation, not be completely quiet, but you know what? Maybe there's a reading corner off on the side in a media center. Then, of course, technology. We definitely saw the impact of technology or lack of technology and connectivity that happened during COVID. So we want to make sure that we have environments that support the use of technology, making sure you know that a desking space allows for the use of a laptop and a notebook or another book, that you have the ability to plug in. And we all know some people work in buildings that are very, you know, they were built in the 50s and 60s. So do they have enough plugs? Probably not, but there are a lot of things we can do for that. We can bring in what we call a power tower, where it's a mobile unit, power unit that can come up next to a set of desks and kids can plug in and get some extra power. That can even happen in a cafeteria, media center, things like that. So just because a building physically was built a long time ago doesn't mean that the environments can't really support the beauty and aesthetic of that building, but also support that new dynamic environment.
That's just a really good overview of all of the different ways that kind of students and teachers have choice, because there are certain things that are fixed, and then there are certain things that you can change by just switching it up or thinking outside the box.
Absolutely.
And it seems like there really are a lot of options at teachers' disposal that don't necessarily involve like reinventing the wheel or starting from scratch.
Right. Absolutely. And we don't want you to start from scratch, because you may even have elements in your current environment that you go, wow, I really love that. I really love, you know, this, the way that we've designed this particular setup. Nothing says you have to throw everything out and start all over. You know, the thing that I've really appreciated over the last 18 months is the creativity of our teachers and administrators. They've really, really stepped up and said, how can I make this fun? You know, I've seen teachers, as a matter of fact, we had a group, several districts who came to us and said, hey, you know what? I want to send home art supplies for each kid. So that way they can still have and fun, you know, fun experiences in art. So we actually helped them create their very own individualized art kit that the teachers sent home, and kids could do art. We saw the same thing with science and math, being able to do those individual kits. What a fun way to think of an out of the box, like you said, way to approach learning. Just because students may or may not have those items at home doesn't mean that we can't do them. I can't wait to see that that really super creative feel come into schools in this new age. You know, I tell everybody all the time, I don't like the phrase new normal, because to me, this is definitely not normal. I don't know about you, Matt. This doesn't feel normal to me. But I hope it's not normal. I want to see people. I want to be face to face. You know,
yeah.
There are ways that we can get creative. If we're wearing masks, how, you know, I can't see a student smile. I can see it in their eyes, but I can't see them smile. So what are some ways that we can even do something fun, you know, in, like check-ins? How can we utilize an individual whiteboard? How can we utilize some ways to have students really, boy, let's bring in some art, you know, draw how you're feeling today. Why not try something a little different? Why not look how we can, oh gosh, let's just put that old saying out, right? Take lemons and make lemonade.
Yeah. Sometimes when you're kind of up against a wall and you have to kind of engineer some kind of new solution on the fly, it ends up being really good and helpful. And it's something that like you can, that is totally valid to use like moving forward.
Absolutely. You know, another great thing that I've seen come out of COVID has been really a huge increase in collaboration, not just at the school level, but across the country. I see more and more teachers out on Instagram and Facebook and, you know, all of these different websites who are saying, hey, I've tried this. Does anybody have an idea for this? And it's been exciting to see that open up the world of collaboration from a teacher standpoint. Lots of people are just saying, hey, I can't do this alone. That's exciting. That is so exciting to me.
When you kind of put yourself out there on the internet at large, it gives you a really good sense that you're not the only one struggling with this, that everybody's kind of facing the same, even kind of very specific issues. Absolutely. And that just because you haven't figured it out, that doesn't mean that, you know, another teacher halfway across the country didn't figure it out and has like the perfect solution and wants to kind of put it out there.
100%. You know, when you look at research on what does it take to have a highly effective, highly engaged and high achieving school. When you look at John Hattie's research, you know, and many others, you've got Eric Jensen, lots and lots of researchers out there who are constantly looking at what does it take to make a great school? The number one thing that you can point to is a collective teacher efficacy. And what that means is a collective belief that you can achieve. So how exciting is that to look at that piece that we just talked about, the internet and what positive things that's brought. If you're reaching out and I can get this team of people across the nation and really even across the world to lean on, to help each other, there's that increase in the belief. Because if you look at anyone who worked remotely all of a sudden, who taught remotely all of a sudden, really that self-efficacy went down. You know, that you really have a crush on your own belief system. Oh my gosh, there's no way I can do this. I've never done it before. I've never taught online. I've never used these tools. Even ones like Google Classroom, so many people did not have that experience. I actually worked with a gentleman in South Africa, believe it or not, who he and I collaborated and I helped him try and come up with ways that he could engage his teachers because they were getting all of this influx of technology that they had never had before. So even in the most remote places in the world, we're seeing large collaboration happen.
And that's actually a really good segue into kind of the next topic or next couple questions. The digital landscape has become a lot more relied upon and a lot more commonplace for students. And especially in the last year and a half, but even before that, I was wondering if you could talk maybe a little bit about that increased reliance on the digital landscape, even when students are still in like the physical learning environment.
Well, it's funny that you bring that up because our kids were already there. today's generation of kids, they were already in that digital landscape. It just took a while for the rest of us as adults to catch up. So I think it really was not as much that the students had this new landscape to navigate. They were already there. I don't know about you or anybody out there who has kids, but kids today can help you as an adult set up an iPhone, set up an iPad. You know, they can navigate that. Really, I think the change in that landscape was, number one, getting our adults up to speed. We've got some adults who are very comfortable online. They're very comfortable in that environment. And there were some adults who really had to not only gain comfort, but really had to gain skill and gain it quickly. Because if you think about how quickly this happened, most people were either on spring break or very close. And
right.
That shift happened literally within a week or two. So I can, you know, just around here, I know that we were on spring break. And after that spring break, the school district asked for 1 week. Wow. In 1 week to be able to train up people enough to be able to get online and navigate that. That's a lot to ask, right?
Yeah.
So really, the environment change has been, let me give you a really great example. I think this is probably the easiest example for folks to understand. If I asked you right now, without using any technology whatsoever, I want you as quickly as you can to tell me the American presidents 11 through 15, and I time you, and I say, go quickly, grab me those presidents. Well, that's a recall, right?
Yeah.
But the change really and the shift in teaching shouldn't be just simply about recall. There are things we absolutely have to recall. We need to be able to read fluently, need to know your math facts very fluidly, because those are base skills for other things. But in that president example, it really isn't about the knowledge of those presidents in particular. Changing with that upscale in technology, what really the question needs to become is, you know what, Matt, I want you and your team to research those presidents 11 through 15, and I want you to do some comparing and contrasting. What were the big things that happened during their presidency? How did, you know, what were the negatives? And then in your opinion, I want you to write about or present about, maybe even giving them again that choice, right? So if you think that choice is not only a physical environment thing, but an instructional, a really belief, then I want you to choose how you present. Which of those presidents do you feel had the biggest impact on the United States? That's a much deeper learning. It again uses technology because you're going to do that research. You're going to be able as a teacher to help kids understand and navigate what sites do I use? What are credible? And then think about the deep learning and logic that it takes to be able to dig into those and give back your opinion with evidence on why President number 13 had the biggest impact. That's really where the change in technology has come in that digital landscape. We've got to think about not just being a giver of knowledge, but a facilitator of thinking.
I like that.
Thanks.
Because all of the information is so kind of immediately available, right, that when you're thinking and learning and being introduced to a topic, you don't have to spend as much time on kind of the rote memorization aspects of it. Absolutely. You can kind of move a little deeper.
Absolutely. And there's, you know, there's a lot to be said for memorization. It's definitely a skill, but we also know that we've got information, boy, it's coming out our ears, right? You know, it's overwhelming at times. Cutting down that noise and teaching kids, you know, if we bring in that social emotional aspect, that's another change, I think. Well, maybe not really a change, but a focus of that digital landscape is, as educators, really helping those kids learn to navigate that noise. How do I turn it off? You know, how do I help kids understand self-regulation and just say, I've had enough. I don't know about you. How many times, Matt, did you, you know, working from home, just say, man, I need to get up and walk away from my computer right now?
A little bit, yeah.
I would say a lot of people say a lot, right?
The dog isn't standing by the door, but I think I'm going to take him down and do a lap around the building.
Absolutely.
And get some, yeah.
Well, and I hope that that's really a good change that we see coming out of COVID too, is just an increased use of those brain breaks. We really, our brain can only fill, it's like taking a pitcher and filling with water. Our brain can only take so much of that water being poured in before it needs to process the information and do something with it. So if I get up and I'm moving around, I'm activating, I'm getting that oxygen run, you know, going and really activating that learning. And you and I both know that there are kids, I would actually venture to say every kid, but most kids need to get up and move. They've got to have that little bit of a break. I was here the other day working with someone here at my kitchen table, and she had not moved for, oh gosh, hours. And I said, man, you got to take a break. You got to get up and move. Sure enough, burst of energy, you know, got a little bit of oxygen moving, not stiff anymore. Those things we need to continue to encourage in the classroom too. That's a part of that dynamic environment. Because the dynamic environment is not just about the physical, it's about what teachers bring to that environment.
And then I think on the flip side of that, we've talked about all the benefits of the digital landscape, but it can be, the more and more we rely on it, it can be an obstacle for students who have less than optimal digital capabilities, mm-hmm. say poor Wi-Fi or maybe even something like inadequate space at home.
Right.
Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, I think that was definitely a big challenge for a lot of districts. It still will continue to be a challenge. The districts that I've worked with have really, really gotten, they've gotten creative in ways that I never could have even imagined. We saw communities step up and increase the use of mobile hotspots. Wow. Whoever even thought of that, right? A truck driving around with a hotspot on it. I never even knew that was possible. We saw schools even get creative and say, we've got a district east of here that got so creative and said, you know what, we're going to expand our Wi-Fi capability. And if you want to bring your car and you want to even park and have a picnic, you know, out in the parking lot, just to be able to get some additional Wi-Fi, go for it. We saw school districts send home small hotspots. We saw an increase of mobile devices that had hotspots, you know, right in the computers. So it was really, really neat. Did we meet 100%? Unfortunately, probably not. But boy, districts really stepped up. Communities stepped up. We saw grants being given to get computers. We saw, you know, families saying, hey, let's create a learning pod. I've got great Wi-Fi at home. These other two families, let's just have this small, close-knit environment where we rotate between the three homes and help support one another and, you know, utilize that Wi-Fi. So it's kind of it's a negative because we don't have those resources at the tips of our finger, you know, at our fingertips, but mm-hmm. it's been neat to see that community outreach.
Yeah. Just kind of the increased collaboration. It comes in all different kind of ways, shapes,
Absolutely.
And forms.
Absolutely.
As we're all kind of just trying to help each other through this. Really quickly. I'm sorry, just a second. Let me pull this list up really quick. But we talked about the six instrumental elements that support dynamic learning. And just to run through those again, they were choice, comfort, versatility, connection, stimulation, and technology. And I was wondering if you would want to tell me a little bit how school specialty can customize solutions that kind of tie into a few of those different factors that can help students on their journey to success.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have a process here called Projects by Design. And what that process does is it allows, again, we don't want to be prescriptive. We don't want to walk in and say, you need four of these and this percent of soft seeding, things like that. What we want to come in and do is we want to listen. So our Projects by Design team will come in, sit side by side with you, and really listen to, again, what do you want teaching to look like? What do you want kids to be doing? How do you want them to learn? And then we'll help you pick elements to support that. So again, for example, if you wanted to create a really great CTE career in tech ed environment, or a makerspace at an elementary, or a STEM lab, what we're going to do is we're going to say, okay, what are things that you're doing in that? How can we take this table, this chair, whatever, and create that environment that best fits you? Even in the classroom, being able to say, okay, you want to do more choice in giving kids a place to sit on the floor? Well, some kids may not be able to learn in a beanbag, so let's give them another choice. Let's give them what we call our Neo Sink, which is this really great floor table that you sit on, and you've got a little tablet area to be able to write on. Do some students want to sit on an ottoman or in, again, an adjustable chair that allows them to roll around the classroom and be able to move from place to place? Whatever those elements are, we're going to, again, consult with you and support you in your learning environment. It's not up to us to say what you absolutely have to have. It's up to us to listen to what you want and how you want to create this new dynamic learning environment. So we're here to support you. We love working side by side with you.
I think that's about everything that we had had prepared. Was there anything else that you wanted to address that I didn't touch on?
There's a really terrific study by the University of Minnesota that talks about the connection between the design of your learning environment and the type of learning that occurs. And it's really wonderful to see that, yes, that environment can really have that good positive impact. You know, great teachers are great teachers. They're going to really get as much as they can out of students and do as much as they can for students, no matter what kind of environment they have. But if we can give them that extra tool in a good dynamic environment, then that's what we want to do to help support them. You know, we talk about here at School Specialty being able to help teachers build their toolkit. When they come to the classroom, they come with so many great tools. There are things that they've learned on classroom management. They're utilizing their core curriculum materials. They're out there with their own background and learning about how they learned as students. Those are all tools in their tool belt or in their toolbox. What we're here doing is saying, hey, you know what? Here's another tool that you might want to look at. We've got some really great curricular support that can happen anywhere from core curriculum to some interventions and acceleration programs. We've got supplies like we talked about with those great kits, those art kits or science kits that are individualized. And then we've got those environments that can help support. So we're really bringing to you three very distinct but integrated pillars that can help any environment and any teacher just explode their teaching and learning in that classroom and get everybody just super excited to be there and everyone accelerating into the, you know, the realm that they need to be into that higher level of achievement and that really well supported, great social, emotional environment that helps them to be better as teachers and be better as human beings.
Again, I think that's about all the time that we have today. Again, I wanted to thank our guest, Sue Ann Hyland, the National Education Strategist for School Specialty. Thanks for giving us your time today. Thanks for your expertise. Thanks for being willing to share it with everybody, because I think there's been a lot of great solutions here today that I think people would really connect with. Were there any last thoughts that you wanted to leave us with?
Just want to say thank you so much for having us on today, and we are thrilled to be able to provide a service that can help kids and teachers just be the best they can.
That about wraps up another episode of Schools in Focus. Thanks again to our guest, Sue Ann Hyland. Thanks to our listeners. And thanks to our sponsor, School Specialty. I'm Matt Jones, and we'll see you next time.